welcome to another edition of the True North Country Comics Podcast, dedicated to promote Canadian comic book creators and supporters. I'm John Swinimer. On this episode, I present the Chapter House Creators Panel from Toronto Comic Con 2018. During Toronto Comic Con 2018, members of Chapter House Comics took part in a panel for a select group of event attendees, and the panel included Keith W.T.S. Morris, who's the Chapter House Comics publisher, Andrew Thomas, who's a creator of Auric of the Great White North, Fearless Fred Kennedy, creator of The Fourth Planet, and Paris Align, who is the creator of Haven. During the panel, which is very informative, they discussed how books are produced, the process of publishing, and some of the obstacles of making your own comics for the first time, hints about collaborating with others in the creative process, and the differences between working with a publisher or Kickstarter. Before we go further, I encourage you to like this podcast wherever good podcasts are found, and definitely check out the TrueNorthCountryComics.com website. Like us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, so you can discover a lot more information about Canadian comic book creators and supporters. And now, here's the Chapter House Creators Panel at Toronto Comic Con 2018.
All right, welcome everyone to the Chapter House Original Series Panel. This is where we will discuss some of our books that we produce that are written, drawn by local creators that we try to give a platform to in the greater book market and direct comic book market. And we'll kind of talk about with some of these creators kind of what their process is and what it was like to get published or what it's like to work up to publishing. I think that's normally some of the questions that we tend to get is about kind of the nuts and bolts of how it works and some of the obstacles that you'll find when you are making your own comic for the first time. So I am Keith, I'm the publisher at Chapter House Publishing, where we do novels, original series, as well as a shared superhero universe featuring Captain Canuck. And to my left is Andrew Thomas, who does a wonderful series called Auric of the Great White North, which we will be publishing in its graphic novel format and thus shipping out to bookstores and direct market stores everywhere. Directly to his left is Fred Kennedy, who writes the wonderful The Fourth Planet, which is being collected right now into a graphic novel series and will be hitting bookstores shortly and also getting started on Volume 2 as well.
Yeah, well, I'm finished Volume 2. It's Miko that's starting Volume 2.
And that, see, that's a good part of the discussion. And then to his left is Paris, who is working on his series Haven. And what's the name of your writing partner?
Kevin Parnell.
Kevin. And so Kevin and you are creating that series. And all three of you are on different stages of publication. Andrew, you're like pretty much done getting ready to be collected. Fred is now getting collected, about ready to hit to bookstores and work on a second volume. And Paris, you're kind of just getting ramped up now into production.
Yeah.
Excellent. So if we can kind of talk about kind of some of the first steps that you would take when you're kind of creating your series and what your first thought was on that, and then how that thought manifested into, okay, this is going to be a book series and I want to try to get this thing published. Andrew, we can start over with you and we can kind of go down the line.
Yeah, for sure. With Auric, I kind of was granted a little bit more, it was a little bit easier on my part because my writing partner, Davis Dewsbury, he approached me with the idea of a comic book series based on a comic convention mascot up in Timmins, Ontario. So the original concept was drawn by another artist named Mike Ruth, and so I had that to work off of. And we kind of sat down, and Davis wrote, he had this plan and this pitch for how he wanted to start the series to progress. And so it just kind of started by taking that image that Mike initially drew and kind of translating it over into my style or into the modern modern look kind of thing. So we took it from there, and we started off with just a simple 10-page mini comic, and it was well received that we decided to continue an ongoing series, and now we are into our fourth issue. And every year we also put out an annual mini store mini comic to kind of keep the tradition of where the book originally came from. So,
and how long was it from Davis coming with just that nugget of an idea to the first issue?
I think it took a couple months, because I was kind of just finding my, you know, fine-pointing my groove, you know, into drawing, you know, into, you know, sequential art. So I was just kind of fine-tuning the skill and the style that I wanted. And, you know, originally, you know, if you look at Auric, you know, from its first book to now, you know, there's been a drastic change, because, you know, as you go along as an artist, you know, you continue to hone the craft and, you know, better yourself and everything like that. So, about a couple months, and then after that show in Timmins, we kind of just went right back on horse and then just started up with the follow-up issue, and then just kind of went on from there.
So originally your concept was just to kind of put something out there. It was a cool idea. You were into the idea. Let's just do it. Let's just make this a book. And then based on the reception of that book, which was kind of a classic comic thing where it was like, it's a story had a beginning, a middle, and an end. And that was the book. And then based on reception, you went back and said, there's more here.
Yeah.
I want to keep doing this. I think that's like a really important way to think about doing your own comics, is to start with either one thing that you want to get done onto paper, or in some other books where it's like this one larger concept and how you can then attack that larger concept. Fred, your book now has been completed, the first volume, so mm-hmm. people have read the whole volume, they've read the story.
Everyone has, it's like everyone, like thousands of copies. So many.
There actually has been thousands of
copies. Okay, good. All right,
that's
good.
Not a lie.
Thank you. Confirming that.
And fantastic reviews of the series. And your book is extremely high concept. How did you and your illustrative partner, Miko, how did you start the project? What was your process on that?
I think I actually talked to Paris about it when I was starting it. I'm almost positive, because you guys were, all the From a Hat guys were together at the table, and I was like, hey guys, I got this idea, but then I came.
Was that story?
Yeah, it was that one. Yeah. I went around and I talked to like a lot of artists that I knew, but I wanted to have a series where I didn't want to do the thing where like the writer just comes and this is what you have to do. So what I did was I started like an online search, and I just posted, "Listen, I'm looking for an artist. All I'm giving you is one page of notes about the concept, and then a one page script. No page will have more than four panels. Draw whatever you want, obey the notes, give it to me, I'll pick somebody, and whoever wins gets the gig." And I'd met Miko, we tabled next to each other at Fan Expo, I think like 6 years ago, and we said, like, it's funny because he threw out all of my notes. Like, he didn't listen to anything that I said to do. But what he came back with was this one page that was just so dynamic. All the characters, like, there was so much there. There was passion on that page. So I started working with Miko, and what was funny was Miko got the idea behind it more than anything else. And I think with something that's really high concept, heavy sci-fi, where it's all world building all the time, you need somebody who's going to bring more than just copying your notes to the page, you know? Because, like, there's a lot of things that I, as a writer, don't understand about art, and I think it's really presumptuous for me to act like I do. So having an artist that gets it was a huge deal for me. And then we started doing it one page at a time, and we did all, originally it was all squares. That caused some problems with Chapter S when we started. And, because originally the pages were all supposed to be able to post to Instagram.
Oh, okay.
That was the idea, was that the comic could all be on Instagram, because we wanted something that you could like have on every social platform and have it be accessible. And then We talked to Fatty at a show, and then we got on board with Chapter House. But we had it all mapped out from the very beginning. Like, it was a very boozy evening where we mapped everything out. And to this day, what's funny is, normally when you create a story, everything changes as you go.
Mm-hmm.
To this day, we still have it mapped out where the last page and the last panel is the exact same thing that we had from the very beginning. Like, we know exactly where we're going. The only thing that caused issues was, do we do it in 12 issues or do we do it in 15? So we've opted to go with 15 because it gives it a more rounded sense. But yeah.
You'd probably end up doing that, I guess, in three volumes, right?
Yeah, so three volumes. Three
sort of a trilogy.
Yeah.
So was that a conscious decision for you when you were mapping out a long-term plan for your story to say, you know, if we did this in three trades, if we did this in a trilogy, it'll hit the market in a different way?
We weren't even thinking about it like that at the time. We were honestly like, we're just doing it to do it. I had just finished working with Adam Gorham on Teuton, which was 4 years of work, and that was the only thing I worked on for those 4 years. And then Adam became Adam, and I was left with no one to work with. So I did a search and started working with Miko, and it was really just, let's do good comics. Like, let's do something that's different. And I still say that when I look at all the sci-fi that's out there, there is nothing like The Fourth Planet right now, period.
Agreed, yeah. I think that what makes your book very unique is that it does stand out against a just plethora of sci-fi books right now. There's a lot, and I think, you know, every time Image does an expo, probably half of their books are some sort of sci-fi meets post-apocalyptic future world that, you know, that's the flavor that's really hot. However, your book, in this bizarre way, is a similar sort of world, but it's completely different.
Have you ever, there's a cartoon called Ulysses 31?
No.
It's because I grew up in Belgium, and like it was my favorite show. It's called Ulysses 31, and it's a French cartoon, because like we all speak French in Belgium. Well, except in Northern Belgium, but we don't need to talk about that. But like, we all speak French there, so you watch French programming all the time, and Ulysses 31 was my favorite show when I was a kid. And so that... it's Europe. I always describe it as very European sci-fi. And Asad Ribic agreed, by the way. So that was a big deal for me. That was actually, he shook my hand and my tiny little carny hands were like disappeared in his giant bear mitts. It's great. So yeah.
That is a good way. It is a very European style bande dessinée sort of feel to it. It reminds me a lot of something that's very artistic in and of its way. Paris, your series has just kind of started. You've got issue one there that's available at conventions right now, convention edition. Can you talk about how your project was created and how it is creating that with somebody else and how the work is getting that sort of done?
Well, originally I came up with the idea. Yeah, sorry. a few years ago, I think I was riding a bus and I wanted to tell a really ridiculous idea with a ridiculous looking character. And apparently if you like something ridiculous enough, I just stuck with it and I had a chance to expand it. And I didn't want it to be ridiculous anymore. I actually wanted a story that made sense. I didn't want magic and robots and all this nonsense that was somehow in this world that was in my head that didn't make sense. So after trying to take it seriously and spending a few months trying to write a story and not getting a single page of script properly down, I gave it to a friend of mine, Kevin Parnell, who I've worked with on like one or two things, and asked him if he'd be willing to write my book for me. Just gave him a small prompt and said, hey, this is what about? I told him I had three or four ideas that he might want to write, but I had one idea I really liked. Turns out I actually only had one idea. I wanted to seem more professional. So I gave it to him. He said he liked the idea. And I told him, because I wanted to work on it, I wanted him to feel like it was his project as well. And if he didn't like any idea, he could throw it out. Like anything about it. There's a few things. I said, I want the character to look like this. I'll handle character design for the most part. But do what you want. So with that, I feel like he really got a sense that
the story was like both of ours instead of just mine. We had like a few names that we came up with. I don't remember any of his. I said Haven. He said good enough. And that's how we got here. Working on it like with him, like it's, we actually have a really good synergy between the two of us. He writes scripts in exactly the way I like them, I guess. He wrote the first issue, and he had all these ideas that I wanted in it, but also these ideas that I had before and threw out that I never told him about, but he found them and put them in the story. So it was like really great. Like right now we're actually rewriting most of the story. We had a small 6-issue arc that we wanted to tell, but then it tied up way too nicely and too neatly. So now we're trying to add a bit more of a initial edge that it had on it. So, you know, issue 2, currently, you know, scripts being rewritten again. The pages I had are gonna be redrawn again. But I think for both of us, it's about having a project that we're really happy with, a book that that we don't regret in any way, which was, like he even said to me, and I agreed, that we both felt like we were regretted a bit working on issue 2 the way we were. None of this matters. No one, like none of you guys have seen issue 1. If you'd like, you know, I have a table, you can come find it.
Where's your table?
I'm gonna ask you to ask. It's a table P08. Yeah. I'm right near the food area.
So maybe we can start with Paris and go the other way and talk about kind of the genre of your book and where you see this book sort of sitting for people that are interested, but give them like the pitch of like what this book is kind of about or what some of the liked things that are similar to it or genre.
I'm not sure what genre it would be. And I think like, I guess it'd be like adventure fantasy type book. I was kind of had the feel for like Avatar: The Last Airbender, but with more swords and less spirituality. That's honestly maybe a bit of the way I draw it as well.
Yeah, when I first saw your book, that's kind of what I saw. It's an adventure book. It is about them getting somewhere with a bit of otherworldly fantasy, I think.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. The book originally had a lot of like technology in it, and I realized I wanted to move away from that. Technology, a lot of straight lines and a lot of rulers and perspective, and I don't want to do any of that.
So you've got a book that you have been constantly reworking. And Fred, you have a book where you stuck and you're like, this is where we're going, this is the end point, and you've stuck to that.
Yeah.
And Andrew, you've got a book that's been currently evolving as you continue to work on it. So those are three pretty different processes of how you guys are creating the series with your partners. And what I also find is really good to show a lot of people is that every single one of you is working with somebody else, and you're all very concerned that it's that they feel like they have as much to say with the creation of this now, or they feel the same way, that they want it to be a collaborative effort. And I think that's what's really great about original material, is that it's truly collaborative of what both visions can be. Fred, your book is like hard sci-fi.
Oh, dude. What are you taking notes about? Yeah.
I'm covering an assignment. I'm like a journalist, so like I'm doing like live tweeting and like.
Right on. All right, cool.
Give her some good sound bites.
All right, sound bites. All right. What was the question again? Like what hard sci-fi? It's hard sci-fi.
Basically what I'm doing.
Yes.
If you wanted my prop. I'm getting you all to say the genre so that
I can
explain that
super
what
hard
I do.
Sci-fi. Okay.
Right.
Hard sci-fi, to be honest with you, the story started, and I've said this in Trade Paperback Volume 1, which will be on stands very soon, that this actually started as Battlestar Galactica fan fiction. I'm not even joking, and I don't think there's anything wrong with fan fiction. Write what's in your heart, just write, just get the story out. It started as Battlestar Galactica fan fiction, and it evolved from there to something much bigger than what it is at this point. And it's sort of like, I love science fiction, and I love really heady concept science fiction. But I also like The something that you don't see as much anymore that I thought Battlestar Galactica did very well is the examination of humanity and what makes us human. And you see people say things like that like it's a soundbite, but you don't see it as much as I would like to. And so when I was writing The Fourth Planet, I had this idea that I wanted to show that even the people that you dislike, that do things you dislike, have very logical, step-by-step reasoning behind what they do. And so in the book, in particular, right near the end of Volume 1, some things go down that you as the reader are going to get really annoyed about. But if you take a look at the beginning, you should have seen it coming. Because it's very obvious in terms of their motivations to do things. And in Volume 2, some stuff happens that I don't want to tell you about. But it's like, to me, it all makes total sense. It's like, it makes perfect sense the way things are going down. George R. R. Martin is one of my favorite writers. Wild Cards is amazing because the best parts about Game of Thrones is that your characters that you love do things that irritate the piss out of you. And like, if you read The Name of the Wind by Patrick Rothfuss, there's some parts in The Old Man's Fear in the second book where the main character just does the most annoying things that you're like, if you had just not done that, things would be a lot better for you. And that's the premise of the book. So I butchered your answer, Keith, and I'm so sorry.
That's okay. What I got was better.
Good. That was okay, good. It's very perfect. Hard sci-fi. If you like Saga, Fourth Planet's better. It's not taking anything away from Fiona Staples, but there are no rocket ship forests in my book because that is ridiculous. Moving on. Andrew, your turn.
Thank you.
With Oryk, it's like Paris was saying, it was kind of hard to pick a genre, but after talking and actually talking with Keith about it's more of like a high fantasy superhero series. All we wanted to do is we wanted to make it fun for everybody, and lighthearted, and above all, we wanted to use this as a platform to have more representation in the North. Because we found that there was an empty market, we wanted to take this this obscure character, even though it's Canadian, he's a lion warrior, and we get that question asked often enough, why a lion? That's not very Canadian. And to that we say, hey, it's not what's on the outside that makes us Canadian, it's what's on the inside.
Well, also to note that up until the last ice age, the most populous mammal on Earth was the lion, and had a range all across North America, South America, Europe, and Asia. So there you go. That's your answer.
Work that into a future story.
Mm. Yeah.
I'll talk to Davis. I did not know that. We learn something new every day.
Yeah, so we have an adventure book. We have a hard sci-fi book. We have I like to kind of call your book, it's like got some magical realism to it, where it's like a guy transforms into a... and there's a lot of magic and stuff, and it's kind of almost like a modern day sort of fable, in a sense,
yeah. Yeah.
And all of those are very different books, and that's what we try to do at Chapter House, is we try to find books that won't compete with one another. So it's really easy for a publisher to find a groove and say, we do fantasy, we do sci-fi. And then you have a bunch of sci-fi titles, and eventually what happens is that more popular sci-fi title or fantasy title starts to outsell the smaller ones, and then the smaller ones get left. And so for us, one of the big things is to find books that each do their genre very well and won't compete with each other, so that on the stands, when you see the Chapter House section at Indigo, you'll see Haven and Fourth Planet and Oryk and Life, Death, and Sorcery, Spirit Leaves. You'll see a lot of these books that are collected that are very different genres, and there's a book for really any sort of market. And that way we can kind of spread ourselves a bit wider and try to find more things that are interesting. And that's really kind of what we tend to look for. And that's also a way to, as a small publisher, to make a promise to Fred, to make a promise to Paris and to Andrew that if you allow this smaller publisher to take care of this book and to get it to market, we won't find something else that will directly compete with it. We'll make sure that this gets all of the attention in that genre that we can possibly provide. And we do the same thing with novels, and we do the same thing with our superhero universe as well. And so you'll see, like, Fred's book will be released first into bookstores, and that will sit, you know, presented with things like Saga, things that are in that sci-fi realm. So they will also get merged differently. So that's kind of in publishing, the things that you think about is, how easily can I get this into a consumer's hand? And to do three volumes is better than two, because you're creating in the mind a sense of, this is a longer story, something I can invest myself in. And then having it sit with other books that might be similar. Bookstores, when they do that, when they end cap or they make that display, instead of, they're never going to give a small publisher a whole table of sci-fi books. It will never happen. But I can get them to put Fourth Planet on a sci-fi table. I can get them to put Haven with Avatar on a table. I can get them to put Auric with other books in that sort of vein. And that's kind of what we think about as a publisher. You have to think about kind of all those aspects, not just, is the story good? Although that does come first. So what I figure we can do now is we can kind of open up to some questions just in general about publishing your own stories, or what it takes to get published, or a lot of these guys have some great knowledge about collaboration, about the difficulties of collaborating, how many times you might find people that you start working with on a project and it just kind of pitters out because the spark isn't there. And we can kind of take some of those questions if anybody has any. Yes.
I was going to ask, what's it like working with Chapter House versus going out on your own with Kickstarter, for example? I know you're putting there someone.
No, that's
putting you on the spot.
I'm a very honest person, even if it doesn't reflect well on me. I mean, the truth is that Kickstarter, you will make more money. That is the 100% truth. Because you get the money. When you raise $15,000 to print your book, that is your money. The difference is that Kickstarter is literally a creator-to-consumer market. So you get the 15 grand or the 10 grand to make your book, and you're responsible to fulfill it to those few hundred people that purchased it. What you don't get is you don't get the access to comic book stores, Indigo, Barnes & Noble, Walmart, Amazon, all of those distribution chains. So yeah, I've told a lot of creators this when they've asked me, if you're interested in just making the money and you want to just move on, I mean, I just got this story, I just want to do it, get it out there, move on to the next thing. Kickstarter is great. It is absolutely great for that. If you have a series that you need distribution to reach a wider audience, a traditional publisher is what can really help you with that. Now, what we try to do, and this is where, as a small company, we can bridge some of those gaps. We try to work both angles, where if one book, they need the capital in order to create the book, which is what Kickstarter is really used for, then we can work out that as a publisher, we'll take on the printing aspect and fulfillment for that Kickstarter. Either fulfillment to the user, to the client, or fulfillment to the creator from the printer, and then also work distribution in. So that's something that Fred and I are actually working on right now.
I can actually talk.
Yeah.
I mean, a Kickstarter for the volume two right now.
Yeah.
So.
And it's not mutually exclusive. Like, it's, the difference is that when a lot of people do a Kickstarter, you know, you're supporting the artist to create the work, so you get the work. And the truth is about publishing is that there's just not a lot of money in it. If you want to make a ton of money, publishing is probably not the easiest way to do that. Advances, just knowing from the traditional publishing book market, if you write a poetry book, the advances are like $500. You know, you write a novel and you're a first-time author, there may be no advance. You might have to write it on spec. If you're a comic creator and you've got a series, they may pay you the page rate, and then they may give you a back-end deal. Or they may not pay you the page rate and just give you a back-end deal. Publishing contracts range. You can make $1 million on an advance for a novel, or you can make 500. And that's the truth about publishing, is that it's very, very difficult, because it is, you know, it's a numbers game, you know. So what we do, like with Fred's book, Fred needs to get Miko to draw this book. And Miko's art is, if you pick up this book, this guy is pouring his soul into this thing. So Miko needs to eat while he's doing the book.
He loves wine.
He loves wine. So loves this wine. Is where you split the difference. You run a Kickstarter to basically give the book to the consumer for an amount that we can afford to then give Miko to live while he's drawing the book. The consumer gets the book just like a traditional Kickstarter. The creators get the money in order to fund the project. And then Chapter House, as a publisher, will then work with that group to put together the print, the layout, the structure of the book, the edits, the copy editing. We'll still do all of our traditional publisher duties there, as well as print a surplus of the book in order to give them distribution internationally. And that is because we're such a small company that I can give that time to them in order to do that. But Kickstarter has absolutely changed. It has changed the game as far as comics publishing is concerned. It is a whole new world out there. There are people that are super successful without any traditional publishing deals and doing very, very well. Hopefully, with Fred's book, we can meet somewhere in the happy middle. And we've already had success doing that with a series that we've done called Die Kitty Die, which is done by the great Dan Perrin and Fernando Ruiz of Archie fame. So they've kickstarted their first two volumes, and Chapter House, we handle the collation, the design, the printing, and the distribution. And that way, we're able to get a high-quality product and not be so resource heavy and take a chance on something. So I hope that's a detailed enough answer for you.
But I wanted to get from the
creators, yeah, absolutely.
Their viewpoint as well. Like, what's the benefit of having Chapter House with you?
I guess we defer to me. I think Chapter House is great. But, you know, to say more on it, I think what I like about Chapter House is the fact that, me working on Haven, because I do have other projects that, as I'm going along with it, I don't feel this pressure to, have everything, rushed out for, people I would owe,
rewards, bonuses, incentives.
Yes. The incentives. But with Chapter House, I know I can draw the book. I can, you know, put as much effort into it as, well, obviously all my effort into it, as I feel, which is all of it. And I have the time to do it. I have time to tweak it, to make it perfect. Whereas I feel with the Kickstarter, there's a lot more pressure on getting it out right away. And not to say that's a bad thing, promptness in comics. I'm not saying I'm not like a super slow artist, but the fact is, my writer and I, we couldn't go over and say we're gonna tweak the story again, and the ending, we don't like it, so we're gonna fix it up. We wouldn't have that same opportunity if we were to do it to Kickstarter, because then we're set much more into a schedule. And I know I pledged to a Kickstarter in 2015. I'm still waiting for that book to come in, and I have the artist on Instagram. He'd message me every now and then, oh, cool art. I'm great, thanks.
Where's my book?
Yeah. But, I can't say that. I don't want people to say that to me. They wouldn't, though, because,
Because you're going to do the book.
Yeah. Fred?
The thing is that what frustrates me the most about Kickstarter is that anything that takes away time from creating content is time that's taken away from creating content. I just want to write stories. I just want to tell stories. And whenever you're doing comics, like even with Chapter House, you've really got to make sure that when the book's coming out, you do a lot of social media, you talk about it, you get the word out there, you make sure everybody knows about the work that you're doing. With Kickstarter, it's like you've got to make sure that you've got the book done, that it's written, then you've got to make sure you talk to all your artist friends so that they can get your incentives, your stretch goals, and then you don't do the, hey man, you want to give me free work? Like, think about the exposure. Because never, ever talk to an artist in an artist alley, ever, and say, think about the exposure. It is the worst thing you can say. They will tell you to go away. Maybe stronger words will be used. So for me, that is the thing. And then after the book is done, then you've got to make sure that you've got to do all the legwork. And then you've got to, like, do all the packaging and then mail outs. And so you've got to do all the math of taking into account all those things. And everyone's like, just do it Kickstarter, man. Just do it. And it's like, I get that. But, dude, I'm married. I got kids. So it's not just... The time that I take to write is time away from doing my duties in the household. If I come home and tell my wife, okay, listen, we're going to have 8,000 books in the house, and the whole basement where the kids are always playing is going to be full of boxes, and then I'm going to spend 2 weekends just packaging things and mailing them out. Then I'm going to need you to take the car seats out of the car so we can fit more books in and go to the post office. No. No. It's not going to happen. So that is the, with Chapter House, script, send, ta-da. So that's the benefit for me. Although we are going to do Kickstarter. But that's going to be different because we're going to do it with Chapter House. And so we've already talked about the numbers. And what's great is that guy does publishing. So when it comes to printers, we're just going to use the printers that we already use. And then the process will be vastly streamlined. We're also going to be using our connections with comic book reviewers and stuff to get the word out that we're doing this Kickstarter. And once the trade is in stores, that's going to be significantly easier. Done.
Now, I can talk on the flip side of that because I've actually ran 3 successful Kickstarters for Auric, and this basically started just as, you know, we did this on our own time, and I'm also, you know, married with kids, and it's a different you know, ball game because, you know, when it comes to the indie comics or, you know, you are putting all your time and your effort into this book, and you're doing it on your own schedule. You know, when you're not, you know, at your job, or you're not playing with your kids, or being a husband, or whatever it is that may be.
Staining the deck,
yeah.
Painting.
Yeah,
of course.
It's
fixing drains.
You know, what we hope is, you know, what we want to do is we just want to create a product that you know, and draw for the sake of drawing, or telling a story and sharing it with everybody, and Kickstarter has been great because, you know, I can't, you know, always shell out, you know this much money for printing and all that, and unless you're printing in quantities, it becomes expensive to do it in small runs and small doses. So, you know, that's where, you know, the beauty of Kickstarter comes in. You know, we used it to just cover the costs of printing, and then we ship the books out, and then when the time comes for the trade, that's exactly it. With Chapter House is just to start, you know, broadening the audience and getting that collected edition out into the hands of more readers. So, you know, Kickstarter has been, you know, it's definitely, you know, changed the game for comics, you know, like Keith was saying. But at the same time, you know, you if you want to have more people read it, then, you know, a traditional publisher, you know, and their resources is definitely a viable option to consider.
Yeah, we're at this amazing point in comic books where there are so many publishers, and there's Kickstarter, and there's webcomics, there are a billion ways, you know, to read or consume a story. And there's no wrong way to do it. There's, if you want to put your book up online for free as a webcomic, there are people that are super successful doing that, and they sell merch, and they make enough to live just selling merch off their webcomics. There's people that have traditional publishing deals that make enough once they're famous enough or the book is selling enough in the back catalogs that they can live off of making comics. And there are people that do Kickstarters that do Kickstarters that's basically their job. There's a couple like web things that go into Kickstarters like on an annual basis now that are like, this is like, they use Kickstarter as a publishing model. So really the only difference between a traditional publisher and web or Kickstarter or anything that you're gonna do and print yourself, the only real difference is distribution. That's it. And it's how far of a reach are you looking to have. But yeah, you can absolutely make comics without a publisher, and publishers go and they find those. Like I approached Paris about his book. You know, I have been working with Fred on his book, like to make sure that we get this thing out and looking a certain way. And yeah, there shouldn't be any limitations to stop you from making comics, whether you have a huge budget or zero budget. There's an outlet there at any range. So that's hopefully. All right.
I'm gonna say something really quickly then, because there's a Kickstarter thing, and there's, you know, a Chapter House. When I first put out Haven, I didn't use either of them. I was just on my own. Paid for the printing entirely by myself. It really sucked. I realized, I'm like, wow, if I sell every single issue, I'm going to have a profit of like $15. And I'm like, I'm going to use that $15 for something, I guess. But then when, you know, more than the weekend goes by and you haven't sold every single issue, it's like, well, damn. I really could use that $15.
Yeah.
But no, it's great. Like Kickstarter, like with it, you actually, like, you know, you can make money from it. You can do it to sustain yourself.
You can use it to literally pay yourself to do the work, because people are there to support you because they're interested in the concept.
And like Chapter House, you know, same thing. You can use it, like, again, there's more than $15 like in it. But there's also distribution. There's like getting it out there. Whereas I found with Kickstarter, you know, I've seen people Kickstart comics, and I'm like, great. The people who pledge to it and got their incentives, they get the book, and I never hear anything else about it. They do another Kickstarter for issue 2, and I'm like, wow, I really wish I pledged for issue 1, and I'm going to have to, like, pledge for issue 5 to get all 5 issues. I'm like, can I just buy issue 1 now? Or...
Yeah, it's a new platform that's just still evolving. That industry is still changing. Any other questions? Yes, in the back. So the first thing that I would, like, personally, what I would do, if I had a concept for a story and I wanted to test the waters, is I would create a website for the series or for the concept using like a Squarespace or a Wix, something like that's very user-friendly, very easy, and I would get my pitch down there and make it interesting and interactive. And what I usually tell people, I did comic book consulting before I started as publisher at Chapter House, and worked with a lot of different projects. And one of the things that I always told writers that I worked with was to come up with what the book is, where it could end, like what would be the big pitch, what it's all about in a good elevator pitch and a good summary, and then try to find the right visual for the book and commission what would be like a really nice cover image that you can use as promotional as well. And those things are usually enough to get people excited and say, oh, this looks cool and this sounds cool. If you can get something to look interesting and to sound like it's interesting, then you can usually add one of those like email for more or follow us on Instagram, and you build one social platform. I always advise pick one platform that you think your demographic is going to use most and use that platform as a priority. So if you're targeting like a younger audience, you know, Instagram, Snapchat, those are probably things that you might want to use more. If you're looking for more of like a literary crowd, where you want feedback and back and forth, maybe go to Twitter. If you're looking for people that are really into like a certain style of art, like a house style or a classic comic book style of art, Facebook, 100%. Do the research on those things and then find a simple, streamlined way to position your book. And try for a few months. Go out to shows, have the poster, hand it out to people. Let people at least see what it's about. You know, you're only going to be investing in your own idea. And people will tell you. And if you get no bites, if you get nobody that's like, wants to hear more, then you kind of know that maybe I should try another idea. But every once in a while, you'll come across just a concept where somebody reads it and says, this seems really great. Where can I find out more? And that's kind of sometimes the incentive that you need to keep going and keep creating. But yeah, that's the quickest, cheapest way that I know how to at least get it to look professional and get it seen by people. That's been most successful?
There's this book called Saga where they go to this rocket ship forest. It's amazing. Yeah.
There's actually quite a few books that I've had pitched to me in various parts of my career, which I've passed on. Yeah, because they're just the question I always ask is, who's the market? And if the answer is, well, the story's awesome, I don't know where to sell that book to, you know. But some of the greatest pitches that I've seen, you know, come through. I think there was one book that I was had a meeting with a guy, which was, I can't really say too much about it because we're still working out details, but it is the best of Saturday morning cartoons meets like superhero, but like wrestling. I don't know. It works on a level that is like, I could see this as an animated show. I could see it as a comic book. I could see it as vinyl toys. I could see it at, that's when I know it's a good pitch, when it's, I could see it as anything. You know, it's not just limited to one thing. Fred's pitch is pretty good, though. Paris's pitch was pretty good, and Andrew's pitch was pretty good. That's why they're sitting up here. So, yeah.
One of my favorite image books, probably of all time, is the series Chew. And you're talking about a concept that was completely out of left field. I think that was one of them that was, among many great others, but it was just, you know, this about this detective who has the ability to take when he takes a bite out of anything, he gets a psychic impression of the origin. So he takes a bite out of an apple and he knows what tree it grew on or what pesticides were used or whatever. So naturally he starts, you know, finds a job, you know, in this agency, and he starts biting, you know, corpses and figuring out how they died and stuff. But the funny thing about it is that the whole series is somehow or how or other revolves around food. So
yeah,
it was
the pitch isn't what actually, like, sometimes the concept could be crazy. It's how the story is told and what the story is saying is what's really important. We had another question. Yes.
We gotta be. Everybody's gotta have their part, you know. It's like everybody's gotta get like a seat at the table. You know what I mean? To feel validated. Some people, like, you play to your strengths. Like, some people are like really good at coming up with ridiculous concepts, but they're not really good at following through with the fine details. So having like maybe an artist who's really good at doing like really good broad stroke character design, and then having like somebody who comes in and was like, you know what they could use? This. Like adding in those little parts. It's all about like a team thing. You know what I mean? Everybody's got to play to their strengths. That's really what it is. And you've got to make sure that, like, you can't always think your ideas are the best. You got to pick your battles because it's like a relationship with your wife. You can't always win. You just got to accept that. And you got to, like, let them have their say, too. Because, like, there's ideas that Miko has had with character designs in the Fourth Planet that I have not agreed with. But I'll just let him go with it because he's so passionate about it. I know that I'll get better work from him if he's doing something he's really, like, enamored with and really pumped up about than if I'm like, no, you draw it my way because I want it to be like this, you know?
Yeah. The best comics are the ones where the whole team is excited about working on it. The same with any sort of collaborative creative effort. If the creators are all working together, giving and taking, you're going to get the best work out of everybody. You can't be precious about, you know, everything. You have to, like Fred said, pick your battles.
Thanks to Keith, Andrew, Fred, and Paris for the very informative panel. You can discover more about Chapter House Comics on Twitter at ChapterHouseCA and online at chapterhouse.ca. And thanks to you for listening to the True North Country Comics podcast. I invite you to subscribe, like, and comment on the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at True North Comics, on Facebook at facebook.com/TrueNorthCountryComics, and on Instagram at instagram.com/TrueNorthCountryComics. And please send your feedback to info@TrueNorthCountryComics.com. Thanks again for listening, and come back soon for another episode. Bye for now. True North Country Comics Podcast is copyright True North Country Comics. Copyright 2018.